Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'm Attorney David Mandel, and I represent the defendant appellant, John Holt. The arguments advanced by the government in order to convince Judge Crabb to let in some very unfairly prejudicial evidence in this case were not supported by the evidence at trial. And the damage...
Is the government's strongest argument, though, that since the jury acquitted on the point that this evidence was intended to reach, and the evidence was very strong of the methamphetamine activity, this was, if error, this was harmless error?
I disagree that the evidence was very strong on the methamphetamine conspiracy. It was a historical conspiracy. A lot of the government's witnesses gave inconsistent statements on the stand under oath, prior inconsistent statements. Their credibility was certainly at issue, but with the spillover effect of this highly damaging evidence, painting my guy to be a sexual molester, child abuser.
But it gets back to Judge Wood's original question. He was acquitted on the count of intimidation.
Well, because there was no evidence on that. The two of them were sitting there blowing kisses at each other. It shouldn't have come in at all. How do you measure after the fact the damage it causes by once you let it in?
Where were they blowing kisses at each other?
Well, it's not in the record,
in
but I think the government, yes, I think the government is aware and acknowledges in its brief that the victim undermined the government's case, and that's exactly how the victim undermined it.
Well, then how does that make it prejudicial on the other count?
Well, it makes it prejudicial on the other count because the jury's still left to assess the other charges.
If he's a bad guy in the substantive count and not a bad guy on the intimidation count, how does that work?
Well,
I mean, if they don't think he was a bad guy in the intimidation, that he beat her and all the other allegations, had sex with her when she's a minor and so forth, then how does that make it prejudicial in the substance?
Well, I'm not so sure they didn't think he was a bad guy in that kind. I just don't think they believed he intimidated her when he took her down to testify at the grand jury. The problem is there's no way to sort out when he's faced with the other charge, and I think it was a close case.
Well, what do you think the jury was thinking? They think he's not guilty of intimidation, but what bad inference do they draw from the testimony about intimidation that they then use to convict him of the drug offense?
It's not the bad testimony about the intimidation. It's the bad testimony that he was having sexual intercourse with a 14-year-old girl when he was 34 and got her addicted on methamphetamine some 10 years before the conspiracy, that paints him as such a bad guy that they want to hang him on something. They couldn't hang him on the intimidation charge because the evidence wasn't there.
But your argument essentially, this is a compromise verdict, you know, that the jury is sort of forced to acquit on the intimidation point because, as you put it, they're blowing kisses. The jury just doesn't see him as intimidating her for whatever reason. But the jury doesn't like him because he's a nasty guy, because he beats her and does all these other things. And so they say, fine, we'll convict you on the meth charges. That's your theory, anyway.
The problem is you can't filter it out because that evidence should never have been admitted in the first place, and once it's in there, there's no way to truly assess the effect it has on those jurors on the other count. On the count they acquitted him on, there just wasn't the evidence.
What was the failure of proof on the acquittal? What didn't the government prove?
They didn't prove that he intimidated her when she went to testify in front of the grand jury, that the mere fact of him driving down with her and her going in, and she refused any assistance from the marshals, anyone else. They followed her out to the truck stop where he was waiting for her to
drive.
How
old was she when she testified for the grand jury?
I believe she was 25 years old. It was 10 years later. And that's why it was so damaging, because it had no correlation whatsoever.
So your argument is that they couldn't convict him of intimidation because by that time she was too old, but they still knew about the sex was 14.
They couldn't convict him of the intimidation at that point because he hadn't actually intimidated her into not testifying.
Well, was there testimony that he'd beaten her regularly during their relationship?
Not during the trial, it wasn't. There was one incident where he beat her a few weeks earlier, but during the course of their relationship, those were the arguments the government used to convince Judge Crabb to let it all in,
and it
wasn't there.
She didn't testify.
She did testify.
She denied that there was any beatings, or was not asked?
She said they were very rare, and the only time it happened was when I lied or cheated on him. And I had nothing to do with making her do stuff or exercising control over her. There was no expert to tie that in with battered woman syndrome to even, you know, make the argument to the jury. It just let everything in, and it just was devastating in terms of painting him into being such a heel that you want to hang him on something.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Vandell.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Shibolinsky?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I am Laura Shovelinsky Finn. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney in Madison. I was the trial counsel in this case as well. I agree with the Court that the harmless error analysis seems to scream out in this case.
Well, and the truth is, it's too bad you have to get to that, because this evidence of the 10-year-old behavior otherwise, it seems to me, is extremely questionable. This is a long time ago that the things that you were trying to get in happened, vis-a-vis the events that Mr. Mandel was being charged with, namely intimidating her because they drove down. You say, oh, well, you know, you've got to go into like the day she was born on forward to get the full story. It just seems to me inviting trouble like this.
Well, Your Honor, actually, what we did is we went back to how these people got together in the first place, because that 10-year relationship really did impact whether or not a jury could infer intimidation from the actions that occurred right before this grand jury. What the government...
I don't know about that, really. I mean, you know, going back to the inception of the relationship is, you know... Do you do that in every case? You go back, you know, you've got a married couple, they've been married for 50 years, you go back to the day they met?
It depends on whether the last 50 years were a constant process of conditioning. Conditioning someone to know what the other person means by their actions, actions which might be subtle and might not convince others that there's a danger. If somebody dropped me off at the grand jury and told me they'd meet me at the mall after, that doesn't sound so intimidating. But if that same person...
Yeah, so you basically got a weak case on intimidation.
Your Honor, I disagree with that. What the evidence of intimidation was is that 2 weeks prior to Ms. McLean being served with the grand jury subpoena, the defendant, Mr. Holt, stayed with her constantly. He was her constant companion to ensure that she wouldn't get served.
Were they still in a relationship... that is, living together or something like that?
They were not living together at that time because the house that they were living in was condemned. Eventually, she was served at the condemned house. They were together at that house. They weren't supposed to be. This was a sordid 10-year relationship.
Why do you think he was acquitted on the intimidation count?
I think he was acquitted on the intimidation count because the victim's testimony undermined the government's case. What happened when Ms. McLean got up on the stand is her testimony was she wasn't afraid of him right at this moment, that yes, he had beaten her, but sometimes she deserved it, that despite beating her 3 weeks earlier and the picture 3 weeks, before the grand jury subpoena, despite the picture looking terrible as he bashed her head against the dashboard of the car, she conceded on cross-examination, well, that was probably... It was probably so bad looking because she was a meth user and she tended to have dark circles.
Was she charged?
Was she charged?
Yeah.
No. No. The theory of the government's case was that Mr. Holt attempted to control his surroundings, attempted to control her behavior, and that by him bringing her to grand jury in violation of a no-contact order and then hiding at an off-site location, that was his attempt to intimidate. The government didn't have to prove that he actually intimidated her, but only that his actions were an attempt to, that's what his intent was. And it's the government's theory that it was important to understand how these people functioned together, what it is she knew, what she expected from him. And we had two inmates that were housed with Mr. Holt prior to trial who also testified that he told them that at times he would park bulldozers in front of the house, in front of the door, so she couldn't get out. He would take the battery out of her car so that she couldn't leave.
Was their testimony on the stand consistent with her grand jury testimony?
Her testimony was less than her grand jury testimony, I would say. She backed off considerably. And I can agree with Mr. Mandel that there was what appeared to be blowing of kisses in the courtroom. And in fact, she testified that she still loved him. She testified that despite having four children with him, she gave them up to the state because she wanted to be with the defendant. The government, again, theory was that Mr. Holt controlled this young woman's behavior from the time she was 14. He conditioned her to understand what he meant by actions that might be subtle and misunderstood by others. And that was the government's theory.
What did you say about the blowing kisses?
Mr. Mandel suggested that the victim and the defendant blew kisses at each other in the courtroom in front of the jury. And I can tell the court that although it's not in the briefs or anywhere in the record, that did happen.
That did happen.
That's the greatest thing for your case.
No, it certainly wasn't, but the charges were brought to because we felt that Mr. Holt was really trying to affect the system, and just because he could control her, that him bringing that into the courtroom, the grand jury process, and this process needed to be dealt with. And had she testified consistent with her grand jury testimony in its entirety, I believe that that we would have had a better shot.
Did you try to impeach her?
I did, but it was to no avail at that point.
Thank you, Ms.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Mandel, your time has expired, but you can have another minute if you'd like.
I'll be very brief.
There were two jailhouse snitches that the government enlisted 2 weeks before trial, both convicted meth dealers in different federal cases. That's who the government relied on. Their testimony, they claim my client admitted these things to him, which he denied, but the evidence from all the other witnesses were that it wasn't true, that he had no bulldozers, he didn't lock her in, that she came and went as she pleased over the last 10 years. There were a number of other girlfriends that would move in and live with my client when she moved out, and she wasn't restricted or controlled at all. And in fact, with respect to the alleged beating incident, they took the DNA, the blood that they found in the vehicle, and tested it. It wasn't even hers.
How old is he?
He is 20 years older than the victim.
20 years older than the victim?
20 years older than the victim.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Mandel. And you were appointed?
I was.
And well, we thank you for your efforts on behalf of her.
Thank you for your attention.
Our last case for argument, United States v.